Israel continues its deadly onslaught on Gaza with a death toll now from the U.S. Israeli genocide rising to over 34,000. An Iraqi military base housing PMU resistance fighters comes under a drone attack south of the capital, Baghdad. Some Iraqi officials have blamed the strike on Israel. And U.S. police in New York raid a major pro-Palestine sit-in at Columbia University campus, arresting over 100 students. More Palestinians have lost their lives as the Israeli regime continues ahead with a genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Health Ministry has reported 37 deaths in Israel's indiscriminate airstrikes and shelling over the past 24 hours. New fatalities have pushed the death toll since beginning of this onslaught to over 34,000, most of them women and children. At least 76,900 Gazans have also been injured during the same period, while thousands are still unaccounted for and presumed buried under rubble. The Palestinians in the besieged strip are struggling to survive as the regime continues blocking humanitarian aid. UN agencies have reported a steep rise in malnutrition in Gaza. Health services are also on the brink of collapse as over 12 out of 36 hospitals are only partially functioning. And the regime continues its genocidal campaign in Gaza, defying global outcry. Israeli occupation forces have carried out fresh raids on several areas of the occupied West Bank. They include Nur Shams refugee camp and near the city of Tokharam, where at least 7 Palestinians were killed since last night. Our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil joined us earlier with the updates.
For over 40 hours, unfortunately, the Israeli military is still conducting a military raid in the Nur Shams refugee camp in Tul Karim. During this military raid that is still going on, Israeli soldiers are raiding Palestinians' homes, forcing women and children out of the homes and turning these houses into interrogation centers. At least 7 Palestinians had been wounded this morning. 2 Palestinians were shot and killed last night, including a Palestinian child. Reports coming from the Nur Shams refugee camp, people there are saying that at least 5 more Palestinians had been killed. However, they are confiscated, their bodies are confiscated by the Israeli forces inside the refugee camp of Nur Shams, while the Israeli forces is still preventing Palestinian ambulances from entering the refugee camp of Nur Shams or to make sure that Palestinians have been killed or not. The Israelis are still operating inside Nur Shams refugee camp and inside the city of Tul Karim. And at the same time, exchange of fire is taking place between the members of the Palestinian resistance groups in the Nur Shams refugee camp as well with the Israeli forces.
Islamic resistance in Iraq says it's fired drones at an Israeli position in occupied territories following an early morning attack on an Iraqi military base. The umbrella group of Iraqi resistance factions released a video of its attack, saying they targeted a key location in occupied port city of Eilat. The strike followed a drone attack on an Iraqi military base in Babylon province, jointly used by Iraqi resistance group known as the Popular Mobilization Units, or the PMU, Iraqi Federal Police, and the Army. Some Iraqi officials have blamed the pre-dawn attack on Israel, although a PMU statement earlier said the U.S. is behind this incident. According to the chief security official of Babylon province, there were 5 explosions at the base, leaving at least 1 person dead and several injured. Our Baghdad correspondent Muslim Salim says the retaliatory attack by the Iraqi resistance shows its ability to target Israeli positions directly.
Iraqi resistance have been successfully directing Israel directly, and it has previously warned the U.S. and Israel not to conduct any foolish acts or operations in Iraq, or else the response will be directly to the Israeli areas, and it showed that it has the capability to strike Israel and its occupied territories. Thus, the Iraqi resistance responded in early hours of the dawn, striking Eilat in a vital target with a drone strike. Now, this comes within the in accordance with the Iraqi Prime Minister's visit to Washington. We all know that the Iraqi Prime Minister is in Washington conducting, let's say, a conversation with the U.S. and its withdrawal from Iraq. So this escalation comes in a very sensitive time to Iraq and its security forces, especially when you're attacking popular mobilization forces, forces that known to fight Daesh, and it has its let's say, role in the fight against terror. So any type of attack on such forces will open up a gate to destabilize the security scene in Iraq. Unfortunately, it is the number one demand by the Iraqi people, the Iraqi nation, and the Iraqi government to remove any foreign forces from the country.
U.S. police have detained more than 100 pro-Palestinian students staging a sit-in on campus at New York's Columbia University. Police clamped down on the protesters and cleared an encampment set up by the students demonstrating against Israel's onslaught on Gaza. Several students involved in the protests were also suspended from the university. They include Isra Hirsi, daughter of Ilhan Omar, a Democrat in the U.S. House of Representatives. A university professor, Joseph Howley, also criticized the move. The university responded to how students were protesting rather than what they're protesting for. Meanwhile, students returned to school premises in defiance and in protest against the university's policies. Since the onset of Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, universities across the U.S. have seen a rise in protests and civil disobedience. Welcome, everyone, to the News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. An Israeli far-right minister has drawn strong criticism for posting the word lame on social media platform X after regime's alleged operation inside of Iran. Israeli opposition leader Yair Lapid says posts by War Cabinet member Ben-Gvir has done heavy damage to Israel's security, its image, and international status. Lapid says Ben-Gvir managed to get Israel mocked and shamed all the way from Tehran to Washington. Also, Israeli media quoted unnamed officials close to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, slamming the minister's comments as childish and irrelevant. On Friday, Iran's army said the air defenses in the central city of Isfahan fired at suspicious objects. However, no damage was reported. An informed source has said Iran's air defenses shot down three quadcopters over the city. And now joining us for the program is Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist, joining us out of Rome, and Barry Grossman, international lawyer, joining us from Bali, Indonesia. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you to joining us on the program here. Hope you're both doing well. I guess we'll start there in Rome with you, Fra. These divisions that we have seen actually growing deeper and deeper by the day in Israeli society, how deep do you see them from your perspective, and what kind of impact do you think they will have on Tel Aviv's politics moving forward?
Well, I'm not sure what we're witnessing is anything other than a public spat in the public domain for public consumption within Israel. The fact that Ben-Gvir has come out and basically said Israel's response to is proof that he believes that Israel has not responded forthrightly. It hasn't responded forcibly, and it has shown its weakness to the whole world. On one level, I am pleased that if this is the actual Israeli response, then perhaps no further action will be required by the Iranian armed services, and perhaps a new deterrent has been created in the region, whereby the Israeli war cabinet, filled with war criminals, will have to think twice before they kill anyone, anywhere, at any time in the region if Iran will choose to retaliate. So it's basically public consumption within public society from public representatives of the right in the Israeli government. We want to tell her, well, should have done more. They have shown weakness, there's no doubt. But we need to see where this will all go as we move forward, because Israeli society cares nothing for the lives of Palestinians. It cares nothing for the lives of Iranians. And we have to see whether or not they have finally been reined in, not by America, not by the UK, not by the EU, but by Iran.
Thank you, Fra, and very gross and welcome to the program. When we're talking about this this tweet with the word lame by Ben-Gvir and Yair Lapid's response to it, it's just a microcosm. I don't really want to get into this one particular tweet to highlight the divisions and the fractions to Fra's point, but the compromises and the concessions that Benjamin Netanyahu had to make with the far-right fringe to get them involved more in Israeli politics, where the impacts you feel like it's had, Barry, and the impacts it had on an already beleaguered and very fractured and divided political landscape in Tel Aviv.
Well, it is clear that Netanyahu is in trouble politically, but not for the reason that we would hope are the case. He's in trouble because there's probably more support for people even further to the right than he is. As for this story that's carried by all the major media outlets, it's very much a storm in a teacup. Let's be clear about one thing, and that is that the Zionists, going back to Jabinski's time, have a long history of criticizing and even assassinating anybody who disagrees with them. Ear Gun was, of course, established in part for that purpose, along with the Stern Gang. And today's Likud party is the natural successor to Jabotinsky's revisionist Zionist movement that so embraced fascism and so admired Mussolini. So this is all a big storm in a teacup, because what we're seeing here is criticism of him, not because he was indeed appointed in the first place to occupy this very important strategic position as Minister of Security for the occupation, but rather because he dared to criticize the Biden administration and suggested that the occupation would do better negotiating with the new President Trump. There are not people lining up to condemn this seven-time convicted criminal. He was indicted 53 times. His name first became public when he'd stolen the hood ornament off of Yitzhak Rabin's Cadillac and threatened that he and his light-thinking cohorts would get to Rabin too, not long before Rabin was assassinated. The criticism isn't concerned with all of this, let alone with his position of support for Zionist and settler terrorism, retaking Gaza and expelling Palestinians and restricting their movement and everything. That's not what the concern is about. The concern is about what his comments might do to relations between the executive branch in the United States and the Knesset and the security agencies of the occupation. But let's never forget that even Obama, who once took issue with Netanyahu during his first term, came back much later and said, look, as the president, Congress is largely controlled by AIPAC, and if you dissent, you won't remain president for very long. So they're not concerned in Israel about any criticism directed at the Biden administration or any enthusiasm for a potential new Trump administration. This is all a storm in a teacup, and I wouldn't be surprised, in fact, if this were staged in order to help President Biden deal with some of the election issues that he's facing as a result of his unabating support for Zionist oppression of Palestinians. And it's really quite tragic that very few people living in occupied Palestine are prepared to criticize the IDF forces or the government policy towards essentially a long-running genocide of the Palestinian people. Instead, they want war. They want to see even more brutality.
Gentlemen, time has gotten better of us, but I want to thank you both for joining us on the program, and stay safe to both of you. As Fra Hughes there joining us from Rome, Italy, and international lawyer Barry Grossman joining us out of Bali, Indonesia. This brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in. Condemnations continue pouring in after U.S. vetoes a Security Council resolution calling for full U.N. membership for Palestine. Iran and Syria are the latest countries to denounce the move. Iran's foreign ministry described it as irresponsible and unconstructive. Spokesperson Nasser Kanani said the vote exposes the hypocritical nature of Washington's foreign policy, adding U.S. is isolated in its stance at the Security Council. Syria also condemned the veto. The country's foreign ministry said that it shows Washington's blind bias in favor of Israel. The U.S. is the only nation in the 15-member U.N. Security Council to vote against the resolution. 12 council members backed the measure, while Britain and Switzerland abstained. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
A damning report indicates that deaths from terrorism in Africa have skyrocketed more than 100,000% during the so-called U.S. War on Terror. The study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies revealed that during 2002 and 2003, when the U.S. was just beginning its decades-long war, a total of just 9 terrorist attacks were counted throughout all of Africa, leading to only 23 casualties. But after 2 decades of U.S. intervention in Africa with the purported aim of helping the continent in counterterrorism, deaths from Takfiri violence in Africa increased to 23,322 last year, reaching a record level of lethal violence. An article published by the Responsible Statecraft website notes that these findings contradict claims by the U.S. military command in Africa, AFRICOM, that it is thwarting terrorist threats on the continent and promoting security and stability. So, what exactly are U.S. troops doing in Africa if they're not fighting terrorists as they claim? Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and this is Africa Today. This week, we are focusing on an unprecedented upsurge of terrorism in Africa, amid the presence of U.S. troops across the continent. Our experts will give us their incisive analysis on how the U.S. has contributed to increased terrorist attacks in Africa.
U.S. increased terrorism in Africa. Imperialist powers, led by the United States, have long viewed the African continent as a place for stealing valuable assets. The continent has a huge chunk of the world's remaining mineral wealth and is home to major global oil and gas reserves. That is why the European powers and United States seek to control these resources by deploying their military forces across the continent under the pretext of combating terrorism.
It is now becoming clear to all that the presence of U.S.-led Western forces in Africa is the source of insecurity across the continent. Basuma Bazir, Burkina Faso's Minister of State, addressed the 78th session of the General Assembly of the United Nations last year and said Western troops operating in West Africa are out to plunder the region's resources.
We have some 10,000 soldiers, armed soldiers, that are foreign soldiers. Most of them are French soldiers, but there are also American soldiers, Germans, Italian, etc. They have weapons. They have flying equipment. They have surveillance equipment, which is the most sophisticated in the world. And yet, they don't see the hundreds of terrorists that are moving around in order to serve death and desolation, often with unimaginable weapons at their side. In Mali, in Niger, in Burkina Faso, there is no factory to manufacture weapons nor munitions. So, who is recruiting these terrorists? Who is training them? Who is providing them with weapons? Who feeds them and with what means? Do you believe in this philanthropy on behalf of whom the Westerners have sent their armies to the Sahel to die for our beautiful blue eyes? Well, if you believe that, then what justifies the diplomatic irritation and other gesticulation of France when we told them to skedaddle with their armies? The real reason is really about the resources that are underground in the Sahel, indeed.
Well, for more on how the U.S. has contributed to the increase of terrorism in Africa, we have contacted Abdul Latif Ahmed, a researcher and a digital news editor. Thanks a lot for your time, sir, today.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Professor Abdul Wahab Sheikh Abdul Samad, the Chief Executive Officer of the Afro-Asia Institute for Strategic Studies based in Nairobi, Kenya. Thanks a lot for your time, Professor, today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, deaths from terrorism in Africa, as we have seen, have skyrocketed more than 100,000% during the so-called U.S. War on Terror, according to the new study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. Now, these findings contradict claims by the U.S. military command in Africa, known as AFRICOM, that it is thwarting terrorist attacks across the continent. Let's start off with Mr. Ahmed. What's your take on this report?
We can see already that counterinsurgency strategies by especially the West has not improved the life of people. Again, most of the times there are talks about sharing intelligence, supplying African countries with arms to fight insurgency. But again, if this there's a spike in insurgency, clearly shows that the strategies that have been employed are not working. And therefore, there is need to rejig the system. There is need to have alternative arrangements for, to mitigate insurgency on the continent. So again, it is clear that in spite of the claims to funding, the claims to supply of arms, the claims to sharing of intelligence, there is a gross failure of security architecture, on the continent.
The U.S. has 21 publicly known military facilities in 15 countries in Africa and a military footprint in most African countries. Now, let's bring in Professor Abdul Wahab Sheikh. Now, in your opinion, what exactly are U.S. forces doing in Africa? Because we know that they're in the continent under the pretext of fighting terrorism, but we have seen a rapid increase in terrorist attacks across the continent over the last two decades.
U.S. involvement in Africa leads to more terrorism and showing that the current approach is not effective at all. In America or USA has some more than 21 bases in Africa. Whenever they have a base, the insecurity, the terrorism, the conflict, all, you know, it became, you know, ungovernable. For instance, if I give you an example, for instance, in Somalia, there is Al-Shabaab terrorist organization in Somalia. Who keeping them? In Africa, you know, mostly the Western imperialists, because they don't want to allow them, you know, to rule or govern the entire country. At the same time, they want also the government of the day, you know, to at least govern the entire country, because they don't want it. They want to keep, you know, terrorism in Africa so that at least, you know, they can contain within Somali territories. That's why for the last 33 years, Somalia has no effective government. Somalia has no central government. Mainly, the Western world, the imperialist West, they don't want to see, you know, a stable, a strong, and united Somalia.
Areas affected by terrorism in Africa are strategically located and rich in natural resources. From gold and uranium-rich regions of the Sahel to Somalia, a country in a strategic location, to gas-rich Mozambique, a country that experts say has the potential to become the Qatar of Africa. We also have the DRC, the world's largest producer of cobalt and third largest producer of copper. Both minerals are critical for clean energy technologies.
Recently, there have been anti-U.S. demonstrations in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where protesters accused the U.S. and France of backing rebels and terrorists in the mineral-rich eastern part of the country.
We are claiming our rights. France and the United States are fostering the war in the eastern DRC by supporting the rebellion. A country like Rwanda cannot fight against the Democratic Republic of the Congo. We are marching. We are not breaking or destroying people's property. But the head of the police is sending his officers to chase us away.
There is no doubt that Western powers are out to plunder these resources and therefore cannot be part of the solution. The United States military command in Africa, AFRICOM, is now seen by many as an imperialist war machine that creates threats before managing the perception of safety. The ultimate objective of AFRICOM is advancing the United States' economic and geostrategic interest in Africa.
Now, my next question is to Professor Abdulhab Sheikh. Do you think Western imperialist powers are behind the upsurge of terrorism in Africa, and can they really assist in restoring security across the continent?
You know, the Western imperialists are part and parcel of African problems as we speak right now. They want to exploit African resources. They want to undermine the safety and security of African continent so that at least they can exploit and loot the African, you know, resources. A very good example in West Africa, whereby, you know, several countries in West Africa, that's Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Niger, are struggling to contain the terrorism in their respective countries, mainly who are supporting them, those, you know, terrorist groups in West Africa, are Western imperialists. Why are they doing that? In order to loot and exploit African resources. A very good example in Niger, whereby the French companies are mining so that, you know, a 1 kilogram of uranium in Niger, they are buying from localists less than $1, and they're going to sell, you know, into the world market more than $240. Right now, as we speak right now, 186 companies are mining in DRC, you know, Democratic Republic of Congo. And they're creating 110 militias which are answerable to the, you know, Western companies, so that they continue the looting, they will continue exploitation, they will continue undermining the safety and security of African societies or African countries, so that they can easily, you know, loot the resources of Africa. But no question about that. I have no doubt in my mind, African, you know, the Western imperialists are part and parcel of the of African problems today.
The UN Secretary General says efforts to to counter terrorism must be anchored in human rights and strategies that focus on the marginalized and vulnerable people.
Communities and the state need to be joined with the common purpose of rejecting terrorist ideologies and challenging those who espouse them. And this means governments adopting a comprehensive and inclusive approach involving all parts of society. It means starting at the grassroots, where families and local communities are at the front line of efforts to protect vulnerable people from succumbing to pernicious ideologies. It means increasing our support to civil society organizations who make a unique and invaluable contribution to tackling terrorism and preventing violent extremism. And I am pleased that many of them will join us tomorrow. And it means engaging women and young people so that they can play meaningful roles in the developing, monitoring and implementing counterterrorism policies and programs.
Now, Mr. Ahmed, can you tell us more on how marginalized persons susceptible to being recruited into terrorist groups can be rescued from these evil terrorist organizations?
So basically, apart from poverty and ignorance, there is need to intentionally bridge the gap between the haves and the have-nots. Most of the terrorists are able to exploit the people, exploit the gaps in the system, the social gaps in the system. So yes, there is need to retool the system. There is need to have functional education, the type of education that makes people have agency to understand that certain decisions are taken on their own without having to rely on the groupthink and the exploitation of their religion or their culture or their current economic situation. That is what the terrorists exploit most of the time. So for me, education is a veritable tool to restructure the mindset, to reset the mindset of people in the affected regions. When you have the right kind of education, the right type of exposure and intellection, you will not be railroaded into the antics of terrorists and insurgents, as the case may be.
Thanks, Mr. Ahmed, for that. Let's now take a short break before we continue our discussion on how the so-called U.S. war on terror has actually led to a 100,000% increase of terrorism in Africa over the last two decades.
U.S. increased terrorism in Africa.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back. This week we are focusing on an unprecedented upsurge of terrorism in Africa amid the presence of U.S. troops across the continent.
Bassoma Bazi, Minister of State of Burkina Faso, in an address to the UN General Assembly last year, stressed that his country, Mali and Niger, are dealing with a war imposed on them by imperialism under the pretext of terrorism.
Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso are dealing with a war that was imposed upon them by imperialism under the pretext of terrorists. And these are sowing terror and destruction, despite the UN Charter with its principles of equality, justice on one hand, and on the other hand, international law, which has been often cited here at the UN. There is a massive chasm between in the treatment of these different issues.
Professor Abdulwahab, what's your take on this statement by the minister from Burkina Faso, a country currently at the forefront of battling imperialism?
But that statement, I agree with him. You know, the Western imperialists are undermining the security of African nations. They are the ones who, in fact, assisting and supporting terrorism in Burkina Faso. When the military seizes the power, then they can easily contain all those you know, militias who get a support from the Western imperialists, so that they can easily loot the African resources. So the question is, why, when the military came to power, Burkina Faso, Niger, Guinea, and Mali are more safe today than 2 years, 3 years ago? Because 2 or 3 years ago, all those guys were, you know, terror organizations, be it what they call Al-Qaeda or Boko Haram, are getting a support for the Western imperialists so that they can create a tension, conflict, you know, among the African societies. Africans, they must come together and defend themselves against the Western imperialists. The African society, they come together and fight against the terror groups who are getting support from the Western world. That's the only thing the African society, they can survive. Otherwise, the neocolonialism is real, and they continue to root Africa. Because today, French, for instance, if French stop looting Africa, automatically French will become a third world country, as we speak right now. They will become a third world country. So in order to French become a strong nation, in order to be a superpower, they have to loot Africa. All Western cities or all Western, you know, countries, they build the blood of African society.
Now, apart from poverty, ignorance has been cited as a major reason that terrorist groups find recruiting grounds in Africa. Now, Professor Abdulwahab Sheikh, do you think the root cause of violent extremism and terrorism in Africa can be addressed through proper education and training?
No question about that. Both education and training can, you know, can improve the livelihood of the African society, can improve the security and safety of the African continent. Mainly, other factors, apart from the terrorism and violent terrorism, other factors which contribute the instability of Africa, including, among others, that's a political corruption, economic inequality, social fractures, and local grievances, also contribute to the terrorism in Africa. So all those factors together, they in fact contribute the safety and security of the African society, apart from all those facts above are part and parcel of the insecurity in Africa. And the sooner they address the issue of the political corruption, the issue of the economic inequality, the issue of the social fractures, and also and addressing the local grievances can easily improve the security of the African continent.
For decades, Africa has been teeming with foreign military personnel, with more than a dozen countries known to have deployments and bases on the continent. The US and its allies, such as France, the UK, Germany, Italy, and Belgium, have military presence on the continent. Despite this presence, insecurity is rampant across the continent.
A professor in Mali, speaking before French troops were ejected from the country, said that ever since they trusted France, a U.S. ally, to assist in combating terrorism, the situation in the country worsened.
I'd be so happy, like at a party, if France quit Mali today. Really, ever since we trusted them with our security, everything has become worse.
Clearly, these U.S.-led imperialist forces are the source of instability in Africa. Mr. Ahmad, what's your opinion on this?
Okay, so this is what I think of it. I always say that African problems require African solutions. Why are the foreign forces on the African soil in the first? Africans will make, you know, gestures to them seeking for help and assistance. But you see, internally, what Africans should do is to close ranks, you know, is to look for alternative approach to defeating these monsters, because you cannot have investment, you cannot have hospitality, you cannot have your businesses and enterprise running smoothly if you have, you know, a miasma of insecurity, you know, cutting across the region. So beyond blaming and finger pointing at the U.S., we must internalize our solution. We must be able to say that within ourselves, we have identified the problem, and then we have homegrown solutions to fix the problem. Yes, it is easy to say the American forces should go, the American assistance, we do not need it, Western, you know, interference should go. However, we must find homegrown solutions, you know, within ourselves, close ranks, and ensure that we defeat, you know, the rising insecurity on the continent.
There is no doubt that U.S. forces are up to no good in Africa and are, in fact, there to take care of Washington's illegitimate economic and geopolitical interests. Now, many people in Africa are demanding that U.S. troops and other imperialist forces withdraw, as we have seen, and let African countries take care of their own security with the assistance of non-imperialist powers. Professor Abdulhab, you have the last word. What's your take on this?
The U.S. presence in Africa is not, you know, a good sign. It's not welcome at all in the continent. The sooner they depart from the continent, the better. For the last quarter century, the U.S. intervention in Africa is not good. A very good example in Libya, when they intervened in Libya, 2011, Libya was a stable state. Libya has some functioning institutions. Libya has a, you know, better life than today. But as we speak right now, where is Libya? Libya is gone. Again, the intervention of the Sahel states, specifically the French intervention, and together with American intervention in Mali, in Burkina Faso, in Niger, together with Guinea, it's not good. That's why the African society, they start, you know, organizing themselves. They start, you know, against the Western interventions in Africa. They're realizing the military presence in USA in Africa is not adding up. It's not, you know, assisting the security and safety of the African nations. But it's a part and parcel of African problems. So the sooner they left Africa, the better. The sooner they depart Africa, the better. The sooner, in fact, you know, stop that kind of approach, which is undermining the safety and security of the continent, is better. They must come up a new approach so that they can easily, you know, gain the hearts and minds of African society. Otherwise, the multipolar system is now real. And I don't think so now, right now, you know, U.S. intervention in Africa is highly welcome.
Well, there you have it. There is no doubt that U.S. military presence in Africa is a major factor in the upsurge of terrorism across the continent. And the sooner the U.S. forces leave Africa, the better. I'd like to thank our guest today, Professor Abdulhab Sheikh Abdul Samad, the Chief Executive Officer of Afro-Asia Institute for Strategic Studies based in Nairobi, and Abdul Latif Ahmad, a digital news editor. Well, and that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. From Mubara, Kenya, it's goodbye for now.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. Once again, we have the opportunity to be here together in order to talk more about ways, rituals, in order to have a better life. As you know, in the last episode, we considered both the physical benefits and spiritual benefits of fasting, which has actually a presupposition to get closer to Allah Almighty. Another spiritual benefit of fasting is that fasting brings you closer to your thoughts and emotions. You have probably felt an overarching sense of calm in every one of us from the first time that we went through the fasting till now, helped us to think deeper. Every one of us experienced this sense of calmness and peace at our heart, and this beautiful vibe of empathy and sympathy for poor people, which is specific and unique in its own vibe and sense. And quite often, even though the raging hunger of a long fast bothers us, we are calmed down by an overbearing sense of peace. These emotions are the direct impact of a closer connection to Allah Almighty. And this calmness also allows us to be better attuned to our own thoughts and emotions, since we slowly drift away from the hurry and fuzz of worldly desires. Another thing that is quite related to the last spiritual benefit of fasting, which was bringing a kind of closeness to our thoughts and emotion, is that these kind of rituals that we go through in the holy month of Ramadan will help you and will actually bring you a relief, a sense of relief of worldly desires, which is quite the same as the peace that I mentioned. Let's have more details of this actually spiritual benefit of fasting, which is a sense of relief of worldly desires, after a short break. Then we're going to come back in a blink of an eye.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Is all I need.
All I need.
Is all I need.
All I need,
love is all I need.
All I need,
love is all I need.
Oh, oh, oh,
love is all I need. To be all,
all I need.
And I know that you see how much you need.
This
love is all I need. To be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you mean to me. Love is all about me. To be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program For a Better Life. In the first part of our episode, we talked about one of the spiritual benefits of fasting. Every human being has a body and a soul. Both the body and the soul have certain desires, and they strive for domination over one another in order to fulfill their desires. Lustful desires pertain to the body created from dry clay. In connection with this, the Holy Quran declares, verily, we created man from potter's clay, from mud molded into shape. So, as we say, Allah Almighty Himself has created this body, this soul, and He is all aware of all the aspects of our body. So, when we see throughout the verses of Holy Quran that Allah Almighty mentioned fasting as one of the most practices of taqwa or piety or the sense of fear from Allah Almighty, we can understand the importance of this holy action. So we mentioned that the other aspect of a human being is actually its soul, which is a reminder of the wisdom, the creation of humanity, which guides them toward good and godly deeds, helping them to contemplate and admire the spiritual worlds. The soul is a part of our creation, which we have to nourish it with different guidance that we have throughout our religion, Islam, and narrations and verses of Holy Quran, which, as I told you, one of the most important actions in order to purify your soul and nourish it with the knowledge and closeness of Allah Almighty is fasting. One of the ways that fasting will help you to go through all these alteration and inner revolutions by helping you as believers to remember Allah Almighty. Every hour, even every second of the daily life of a person who fasts leads to the remembrance of Allah and reunion with the Almighty and the blessings He has bestowed upon human beings. So fasting brings about this remembrance in two ways. First of all, it makes the believers long for eternal blessings by showing them that the worldly favors are not actually there always for you. They will disappear in a blink of an eye. The pleasure that the believers who fast enjoy when they break their fast and thus end a form of suffering also makes them remember Allah and the eternal blessings He has created for them in the hereafter. Although those who suffer from hunger and thirst from dawn until sunset apparently feel pain, the favors that await them in the other world soothe their sufferings. Moreover, they find pleasure in contemplating reunion with Almighty Allah, and it is for Him that believers abstain from food, drink, and other worldly desires. So, the noble messenger, peace and blessings be upon him and his family, says there are two pleasures for the fasting person, one at the time of breaking their fast, and the other at the time when they will meet their Lord. So I believe we gotta go through a short break in order to get refreshed. Then we're gonna come back in order to talk more about the spiritual benefits of fasting. Thank you, dear listeners, for being here with me. For a better life here, and as you remember, we are talking about the spiritual benefit of fasting. One of the most important aspects that we talked about up to here was the point that fasting helps the believer to remember Allah and the beautiful, actually, a narration from Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, about the two pleasures of a fasting person. And in this part of our episode, which is the last part of the today's episode, we're going to talk more about this dimension that fasting helps the believer ascend to the level of the angels. Human beings have characteristics and faculties that are both physical and spiritual. When they avoid their physical feelings, these feelings weaken and their spiritual properties prosper. Allah the Almighty has provided humanity with the willpower to descend from a most exalted rank to the lowest of the low, or vice versa. Therefore, sometimes humans can be more revered than the angels and become closer to their Lord, while at other times some people are worse than any devil. Which means, surely, we have created human of the best stature as the perfect pattern of creation. Then we have reduced him to the lowest of the low, except those who believe and do good, righteous deeds, so there is for them a reward constant and beyond measure. The difference between human beings and angels is that humans have a physical soul. Angels cannot eat, drink, have some worldly desires, or be rebellious to their Lord, because of their intrinsic characteristics, they are occupied with the remembrance of Allah and worship continuously, which means they speak not before He speaks, and they act in all things by His command. He knows what is before them and what is behind them. But for humans, the story is completely different. One of the blessings that we as human beings have is the ability and the blessing of free will and choice, so that we can go through the process of thinking, process of reasoning, in order to satisfy our brain that we need. We have this natural need of our soul in order to worship Allah Almighty. And fasting is a big opportunity for the true believers and the true seeker of knowledge in order to nourish this dimension of their soul. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.